This episode is brought to you by CBS All Access. If you don't already subscribe to CBS All Access, please use our affiliate link by going to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS. Using our affiliate link gives us a little credit, which helps us to keep bringing you great content. U.S. residents only. Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of the Star Trek Lower Decks podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And we will be covering season 1, episode 3 of Star Trek Lower Decks, titled Temporal Edict. But before we get started, we have some additional feedback for last week's episode, season 1, episode 2, Envoys. So let's open hailing frequencies. Okay, so our first bit of feedback is from Jim from Florida, and I guess I'll go ahead and read it. His rating for last week's episode on Voice was 2 out of 10 glasses of blood wine. His yeses, Klingons look like Klingons again. His no, yet another series where the men are either toxic, like the first officer and security officer, or clueless, yet arrogant, Boimler, or doing things just to be near a girl, Rutherford. While women are seen as strong, confident, and above all, competent, is it not possible in New Trek for men and women to be equally strong, confident, and competent? That's a good point, Jim.
Yep.
And I think sometimes that is pushed a little bit too much for comedic sake. So I would agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally. All right. Well, next is Rick from Cleveland. And he says the first episode is a solid 4 out of 10 new ensigns. A good introduction to the show and meet and greet of the crew with pseudo zombies. I just have to say it's like the zombies kind of threw me off. But yeah, it was a nice little meet and greet with just getting to know the characters. Well, and he goes on, though. He says, like, the second episode I liked a bit more. 6 out of 10 trans-dimensional energy creatures. Mariner quoting Khan in her sleep on the shuttle is a highlight for me. Mariner drinking with General Corrin was great fun. And antics on the planet worked for me. Rutherford was also lots of fun here doing the round of departments. And then he also said, buried alive, marooned for eternity, moons of Nibia. I had to pull that scene up again just now. I laugh harder every time.
After a little bit of a technical snafu, we are continuing. So this episode, season 1, episode 3 of Lower Decks is titled Temporal Edict. It is written by producer Dave Eilenfeld and David Wright, directed by Bob Suarez. And the description from CBS.com, a new work protocol eliminating buffer time has the Lower Decks crew running ragged as they try to keep up with their tightened schedules. Ensign Mariner and Commander Ransom's mutual lack of respect comes to a head during an away mission. It is rated TV-14 with violence and the air date, as it always does, August 19th, 2020. And I'm not really sure what time it was released this time because I didn't watch it immediately upon release. I watched it, I don't know, I think Thursday morning sometime. It had a runtime of 24 minutes and 30 seconds. So, Kyle, what did you think of this episode?
Oh, actually, well, I mean, as I gave it a 7.8 performances and 10 forward.
Okay.
Because that always seems to be like the very Trekkie thing. Everybody's a little like, you know, whatever. It's like the talent show.
Right.
That's always of every season.
Well, I've given the first two episodes a 9, and starting to sound like Ruthie's arbitrary 9s. I don't want to get into that habit, but I'm going to also give this one an arbitrary 9, but hopefully next week I won't do that. I was actually going to give this a 9.5 originally, but I'm bringing it down a little bit on the second watch. So I'm going to give this episode 9 battle scars. So let's move on to listener ratings.
All right. Our first comes from Edwin from Arizona, and he just gave it a 9 out of 10.
Rick from Cleveland, he says, I enjoyed the third episode more. My rating is 8 out of 10 spears through the foot.
And Wes from Minnesota gave it, he actually says this was okay, but not a good one. I did like the ending, though. That salvaged an otherwise average episode. 8 margaritas on buffer time out of 10.
Aaron from Akron is next, and I think we just lumped all of his feedback in here. He says, I'd give it a 7 out of 10 miracle workers. For the rest of us, we have people following you around, timing our tasks, but I guess Starfleet doesn't do that. Having Ensign Mariner end up in the brig was worth the wait, though.
Yep.
All right. Well, we actually said we might combine them last week into their own yeses and no, or all of the yes, no's, and not good no's, but we got enough that I think we're just going to keep it separated for this week anyway. So let's move on to our yeses.
Yes.
Our first yes comes from Edwin from Arizona, and he said, had more character development from the bridge.
Yep.
Brian from Hawaii says, I love Lower Decks so far. Each episode keeps getting better. My son and I couldn't stop laughing during episode 3. I like that they bleep out the worst swear words and hope it stays at this edgy yet still family-friendly level.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you have?
All right. Miles O'Brien. Yes.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
One of the things I am liking, and I think it's, if it has to be that way, fine. Like, you know, it's like, this is definitely kind of like a non-traditional Trek that we're used to, but it was just like seeing callbacks and whatever. And at the end, it was like, that was such a wonderful, just, because I don't know. I feel like Miles O'Brien is probably one of the characters, especially if you're Deep Space Nine, Star Trek, or Next Generation, that is just like, he's very endearing. And I think a lot of people probably really like him. So seeing this kind of like a throw to him, like at the end, which I don't know, I don't want to go that far into it if we're going to talk about it later, but just like, just having that call out was like, yes.
Totally unexpected too.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I put that in the references section, but it's worth mentioning here.
Yeah.
That he was mentioned. I didn't expect that. That whole ending, I didn't expect at all, actually. So
yeah, the far ending future was very thing. Yeah, the ending was definitely a very like a surprise, cuz I was not expecting any of that to happen.
Right.
I mean, and then, you know, this whole story arc, it was just like, okay, blah blah blah, and then all of a sudden it was just like, yeah, the future or for whatever they said. It was like, so well played.
Yes.
I thought it was hilarious. It's like Cardassians creeping everyone out.
I had that too.
I was just like, yes, every time, like from Deep Space Nine, just like,
oh yeah,
that was our first introduction to Cardassians, that at least that I remember. Yeah. And I was just like, yeah, they're creepy. And Gul Dukat was just very creepy.
Yeah. We had seen them, before a few times on Next Gen.
And I was kind of so it was like, I kind of couldn't remember like any kind of specifics of that kind of thing, but it was like, but yeah, Deep Space Nine, obviously it was like they were forefront.
They were first mentioned, it was actually the first, like, I guess probably the first, no, I guess not the first one, but because I know there was a Barclay episode and there may have been others,
but
what I mean is, like, this was the first episode that really featured O'Brien in a more like starring role. It was TNG season 4, The Wounded, and that was the first episode where we see the Cardassians. I mean, the faces look pretty much the same. The uniforms were all different, but basically it's this Captain Maxwell that he served with on the Rutledge is going after Cardassians, and he doesn't have the okay from Starfleet to do that, so they send in the Enterprise to go get him. And
But
from that moment on, the Cardassians always creeped out people, including Garak. He was always creeping on Bashir, for one thing. With that smile.
I just thought it was a funny little, like, just a, like, I don't know. The show does a lot of this where it's just like these like little subtle, like, oh, here, I'm just, we'll throw this out here.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, the captain was like, wait, I'm supposed to be going to this very important, like, you know, like deal with the Cardassians and us and like whatever. And it was like, oh, yeah, no. It's like, yeah, you know what? The Cardassians are just creeping everybody out. So we're going to do this other thing. And I just thought it was like hilarious.
Yeah.
Because it just, very, very interesting how they're kind of playing some of this.
I agree, totally. And it's, there are things that, you know, if you know the past stuff, like if you
are a
Trek fan, you're going to instantly, well, not, it depends, I guess, on your level of fandom. But if you're like a really big fan, you're definitely going to notice it. Something like Miles O'Brien, if you watch Deep Space Nine, you're going to notice it. Other things you may not notice. And if you're new to Star Trek entirely, it'll probably just wash over you, but it doesn't really matter. Like, it's not central to the story.
Right.
It's just these little Easter eggs, you know? So I enjoy it.
Yep. Same here. And then the next yes, like, oh, my yeses this week were basically like kind of, I felt a little bit like, where do I put this? Do I put this in my feedback or do I put it in my yeses? Because I'm like, these are the things that I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And then it was like everything else is kind of like, it's like, you know, I kind of just was like, my yeses were basically the things that I like really, really enjoyed about this episode. Yeah. But I mean, it was kind of funny. It was like Mariner, like I totally don't know if he had his name, got a name, but when they were on the world and basically, it was like he got stabbed or got a spear in him. And she's all like, he told her or told him that it's like, hey, we live on a starship. No one's going to die from a spear wound.
Yeah.
But then later we see these two ensigns whenever they're like, the aliens are like basically boarding them. And then they were just like, hey, it's like swords and spears. How do these guys get on board?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just thought it was, I just love that like total weird little like juxtaposition of like,
well, that whole
we're thing. On a starship. And it's like, but wait, how did they get on the starship? They have spears.
Well, it was, and it is kind of weird because, you know, it's like they have these starships and.
Right. And then they're using spears.
Yeah.
Which weird. Then goes into my next one, which was basically, it's like Boromir is like sitting there, I guess, cleaning off the whole graffiti thing was hilarious, but like cleaning out the graffiti, and then they like the aliens come back and they're like, come like show up behind him and they're like, don't move, human, we have you surrounded. And he was like, yeah, but I have a phaser. And he starts shooting them. it was stupid little things like that, but it was like, that was really like, this is where the humor of this show, because Lower Decks is definitely not what we're used to. And it was like, you know, at first I was kind of having my issues with it.
Yeah.
But letting it all down, just like letting me just enjoy it. And it's like, these are the things that are coming out that I'm like, that's kind of funny.
What I'm finding is that it's very much a love letter to Star Trek. Like, it's the things that are coming up are like, it's,
yeah,
making fun, but not in not
like not insult, like not like, making fun of it,
yeah,
like, but being
having fun with it
and like, but having fun with it.
Yeah.
It's like it's fun to like joke about, because that kind of goes into my next part, which was my yes, which I thought was pretty much like one of my favorite parts of this episode.
Oh, yeah.
For one, Commander Ransom is kind of a bro. Kind of like, I don't like him. I think, you know, it's just like, oh, yeah. But then you think of like, okay, if you're going to somehow, how do you, like, you know, like, picture someone who is in that kind of level of position, and there's not, you know, like, you know, they're the commander, you look up to them, or like, or the whatever, it's like you're going, like the lower decks are looking up to this person as being like, you know it all, like you're the one that we're supposed to be like aspiring to, but he's just a freaking dude.
Yeah.
But then it was like, here he comes to fight Vendor. And then, of course, he does what? Do we all know? How do you fight in Star Trek? It's like, he's like interlocking hands.
Yep.
And the whole fight scene was, I literally was like, that is probably one of the best things I've seen in a very long time.
Yeah. There was only one part about it that they got wrong. And I think I have that in my notes. So we'll talk about it then. But yeah, I had the similar exact reaction to that fight. I thought it was so Kirk,
like,
I just loved it for what it was. It was crazy and also funny that
it pretty much,
and the shirt off, that was the main thing, the shirt off.
All of it, it was just, we all have seen, like, of course, how do you like knock someone out? Like, in, if you're in, you know, like, oh, here's an intruder on the, you know, the bridge or whatever. You do the interlocking hands and you hit on the back, like square in the back, and they always go down. I just thought it was the funniest thing.
Yeah,
I was like, that was awesome. And then I like the, Mariner. I'm still wanting to see what her, you know, progression is, what they do with her. But as this show is definitely, it's not making fun of Star Trek.
Right.
It's definitely like, for us fans who are like, basically this has like been our life for so long. Right. And it was just her to sit there and they like surround her. And there she's like, circled by spears. Oh, this is a classic. What am I, Kirk? Is this 2020-60?
Yeah.
It's funny. And it's clever, and it's also, it kind of puts you in that mindset that it's like, we're seeing stuff that is like, say, it's like, you know, if you have children and you watch them grow up and you remember, like, you know, like your ways that you grew up, like, well, I'm from the 80s. So it's like, oh, like if my child grew up and then I all of a sudden like here's this Pat Benatar song. It was like, oh my gosh, that's the most amazing song. It's like, you're sharing like that connection and like having, you know, like, I don't know. To me, it's like, if I'm going too far, I'm going too far. But it, like, her saying that, and it's like basically us reminiscing, you'd be like, oh my gosh, yes, Kirk, like, oh, like Circle by Spears, like, you know, like the original series, like all the stuff that happened during then. It's like, to me, I'm like, this is what's making this show more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Is because I'm not taking it serious in the sense of like we usually take Trek. And this is just like a celebration, just enjoying it. And it's just like, here's these little like tidbits or like these little drops. And it's like, I appreciate it a ton.
Yeah, I do too. I think that you have to go into it and drop your, I don't know. I think in a lot of ways, it's similar to Discovery in that you have to drop your, whatever your conceptions are of what Star Trek is, and just, you know, just go with it. And I think in this case, I said in the first episode, I feel like it totally honors the Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and Voyager era. And the more, you know, we see of it, the more I have to agree that it does. And yes, it's telling a humorous story. It's not going to be, you know, this deep tale of what's right versus wrong, or
there's no morality, like, you know, like concept, or like, you know, like a storyline. It's just like, this is just pure fun.
Yeah, this isn't going to be a bedtime story to tell your kids kind of show. It's the type of show you throw on when you're a little down and you want something to make you laugh a little bit. That's what this did.
Right. I think like one of the things though that I'm like, this is at least what I'm coming in. I said before, is just like, this is satire.
Yeah.
It's like, it's complete satire. It's not saying that it's making fun of it, but it's like, this is just like, that's the angle of this. It's not about being Trek and doing all the Trekky things that we're all used to. This is a complete like satire of Trek. Yeah. And it's like, so they're going to make fun of like, you know, here's aliens that have this crystal fetish, yeah, but then have no weapons, but yet they have these spears, you know. It's like, you know, so it's just, it's a little borderline South Park.
Yeah. On Thursday morning, I kind of, like, I wasn't in a great mood from Wednesday night, and I just got up and wasn't feeling it too much. So I put on Lower Decks, and it totally changed my attitude for the rest of the day. So that's the best thing I can say about it. It made me just have a better day. So, you know, I thought for my yeses, Shax coming in, like, I thought that whole bass thing was a little crazy, and I've got that in my nose, but Shax coming in, first thing he does is breaks Boimler's violin. I just thought that was so silly. So Scotty's miracle worker type thing that we see him talk about on Relics to LaForge is now called creative estimating or buffer time, which is now the Boimler effect. So I thought that was funny. The scary 1 week later, like, so they're going into it thinking, oh, you know, no big deal. And then you get that 1 week later and they're all like running around like crazy people. I like that. And the only one that's not fazed by this lack of buffer time is Boimler. Like, Boimler's like, he's in paradise, you know?
Yeah. I feel like he's like, he would be like Data. It's just like, oh yeah, yeah, totally. I'm like, this is no problem. I totally do this.
Well, it's funny because it seems to me like this show is pushing the idea of the model officer is a combination of Boimler and Mariner. So Boimler knows how to play the rules and Mariner knows how to break them. And she knows how to lead. Boimler knows how to follow. And it seems to me that what you want in a perfect captain is the ability to do both. So that's what I think this show is getting towards. And either, you know, there will be a perfect combination together, or they'll learn from each other and develop the traits of each so that at the end of the show, you'll have two good captains. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, but that's kind of where I see this going. I am getting more into Mariner with each episode. And and like you, I do want to see that story, like how she got that way. Like I said last week, I assume that she was, you know, fast-tracked, like she was like a wonder child or something. And, you know, much like they do where like some, you know, 10-year-old kid, you know, gets a PhD or something like that. It's a similar kind of thing with Mariner. She probably went to Starfleet Academy, you know, young, you know, at least probably maybe 5 years younger than the rest of her class and excelled and then got into Starfleet and just became a brat. So I want to see more of that. I'm pretty sure they're going to get into it, probably maybe even the next episode. I got into, speaking of Boimler, when Shax kind of like puts him down on the bridge and he's like, oh, it's just that Huffy Ensign.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Vindor, the sensitive monster, I like to read. That was funny. Mariner's into Ransom. And I mentioned it, the last scene. I kind of wrote these in chronological order, so you know how I didn't group them together. But the Boimler effect, the fact that he gets a plaque, the last scene in the far future, the laziest Starfleet officer in history, all of that I thought was funny. So anyway, so let's move on to our nose.
No!
All right. Well, you only got one from our listeners, Edwin from Arizona. And he just said the weird pitchfork aliens.
All right.
I thought they were kind of funny.
And you didn't have any nose, it looks like.
It's not that it was like nose, but I think I put that's what I put my not good enough.
Okay. The intense bass, making it throughout the ship and then over to the Klingon ship. Okay. That is like, unless that was coming over during the subspace channel or something like that.
Right.
that's not how sound moves. So, and it, even if it did, it wouldn't travel that fast. So it's kind of crazy. And I really had to take exception because a guitar would not create that kind of bass. That's for a bass guitar.
Right.
Not to get specific, but you know, if I'm going to be nitpicking me for a minute, I have to say that, you know, a guitar is not going to create that kind of bass. That's a bass guitar that creates that kind of bass. She wasn't playing a bass guitar.
Yeah. I actually had that written in my notes, and I was like, how does space travel, or how does sound travel in space? And I was like, nitpick, I know.
Well, yeah, it is a nitpick, and yeah, I thought that was, it was dumb.
It was just dumb. Just to put it there.
Yeah, it was dumb. Funny, but dumb. The one thing that they messed up on the fight was that Ransom ripped off his shirt himself, whereas what should have happened would have been like with Kirk, that his shirt gets ripped during combat. That's what should have happened. So if they had done that, it would have been perfect. So I don't know if they did that for a reason or what. All right, so we have a couple of not good enoughs from ourselves, so let's move on to that.
Not good enough, damn it, not good enough.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe this is a little nitpicky, especially when I've basically said I really liked the episode, but the whole buffer time, it was just kind of, it was funny how the Lower Decks like talked about it and how they like pad what they do so that they have more free time. And I kind of was just like, well, but isn't that just kind of like a normal human thing that we do? Like you would want to do that just because that's like, hey, you know, I'm like, I'll have more time to like, you know, like we're not all like robots,
yeah,
or whatever. And so I don't know. Go on.
I was just going to say that I have been kind of dinged by this in the past, where a lot of times when you have to go into project estimation, you know, you end up giving an over optimistic estimate, or you give just an estimate based on best case scenario, and it never works out. Like either you're not at 100% efficiency, like you're sick, you've got a cold, or you know, you have to deal with something that takes away some of your focus. And like, especially when there's an estimate where you say, I'll have it done tomorrow, and then you spend all of tomorrow dealing with some other problem. And then your boss comes back and it's like, you said you were going to have this done. It's like, yes, but I did have to do this instead. And if you have an understanding boss, they'll understand that. And if you don't have an understanding boss, you'll have something I had 2 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. No, anyway.
Well, but right. No, I totally agree, because it's like, I like the whole like idea of it to me in this plot, it was like, it's not how that really works, because obviously it's like, yes, it's like something will like, yeah, in my job, it'd be like, hey, this needs to be fixed or whatever. Like, oh yeah. I'm like, I should be able to get that done in like an hour, but then something else comes up and it's like always something comes up. So you just like adjust and do whatever, but there's context. And it's like, It's just normal for things to not always happen the way it is, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know, like just outside of that, it was just like the whole concept of this like whole buffer time. And then the captain was just like, what? No, everybody's going to be on this strict rule or whatever. And it just like, it seemed very like that just pulled me out of everything.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, who is actually really going to be like, oh, I have 60 seconds to like do this. And then of course we see the 1 week later and everybody's just freaking out and like whatever. And it's like, you know, yeah. I basically was kind of like, just as that being the whole plot, was this whole buffer time? And I was kind of, yeah, whatever. Yeah. I was like, meh.
it was a little crazy. I mean,
yeah, it just wasn't, as a Vulcan say, logically like flowing in this episode. It was just kind of like, they just put it there just to do it. And then, hey, we'll make things happen. And
yeah. Blah. I see exactly what you're talking about.
Could have been done better.
It could have been done better. Yes, it could have. No doubt about that. What I was going to say for my not good enoughs, just one little thing, was what was with the Boimler dancing and fiddle playing and grunting?
It was, oh, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't just that he was dancing and fiddle playing. It was the as he's doing it. It's like, what was that? It was just weird. So that was my take on it. I mean, but I agree with you on the buffer time thing. I was thinking something similar, but I didn't mention it. You know, we talked a lot about the whole crystal spear thing. You know, that was also kind of stupid. And that an ensign would bring the wrong thing down to a planet, you know, especially when it's supposed to be so important. You know, that seemed like really just dumb. And those are just things I'm adding just off the top of my head. All right, so let's move on to our feedback section and open hearing frequencies. Okay, so we only got one voicemail this week, and it is from Jeff, X-Force 11 from North Carolina.
Hello, Star Trek fans. It's Jeff, X-Force 11, with my thoughts about STLD Temporal Edict. Man, this was fun. I enjoyed the fact that Boimler thrived in the environment that he set up, but nobody else did. But it was cool to kind of see him say, this doesn't work for everybody. And to kind of get to see the captain actually know that they're not best ship out there and the most wanted ship out there. And seeing those in leadership feel what some of the lower decks people are feeling. And so I enjoyed that about the episode. Again, it's a fun series, a fun episode. I really enjoyed it. Those are my thoughts. X-Force 11 is out.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff, for your voicemail, as usual. And you will definitely get the full voicemail showcase award because, well, you're the only one putting in the voicemail this week. So, you get all the showcases. Anyway, yeah, I thought you made a couple of good points there, and your short but sweet feedback there thrived in the environment that he created, Boimler. So I think that that's yeah. Very, very much true. And that it was kind of like, in a way, I don't think Freeman really realized that her ship was, you know, kind of second fiddle until maybe that moment. And it's okay. Like, not every ship, like they mentioned the Enterprise, I think more than once in this episode, and not every ship in a fleet that large can be the Enterprise. I mean, the Enterprise is a model, but there are probably some really good ships that are almost as good as the Enterprise. So, I mean, even saying the Enterprise, this and that, it's the top, it's the flagship, but it's not the only one that is doing good stuff. So, but anyway, with Freeman kind of realizing that her ship is just not the cream of the crop, I think it was a little upsetting for her, but hopefully she will use that information to her best advantage going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that it was like towards the end, it was just seeing how like all the aliens were coming and they're like breaking down the door and she's just like, oh no. But I'm like, we're going to be the best ship out there, you know, like, you know, better than the, basically like better than the Enterprise, you know, just because I guess, you know, she lost the diplomatic,
yeah,
you know, big thing or whatever.
Yeah.
And I kind of at first was just like, oh my gosh, this is kind of stupid. It's like, that's not really how it would really be, like whatever. Yeah. But then it's kind of like, well, like we've already seen kind of her and her husband Admiral dealing with their daughter on the ship. And so I was kind of like, oh, okay, I'm kind of, this is maybe this is the character development of like what her role is in this whole like series. And
right.
So I don't know. I kind of like, at first I was like turned off by it. And then I was like, oh, I'll give it some legs and see, yeah, where it goes.
Yeah.
Cause it seemed like this was kind of like a poignant part of her character.
Yeah.
So I'm hopefully that's what it is. So we'll, I guess we'll see. So,
yeah. Yep. And the idea that strict time thing doesn't work for everyone. I think it rarely works for everyone. I think it's pretty exceptional for it to work for everyone. So I don't think that should be a slight on people. I mean, there are times when you're in the zone and you can get a lot of stuff done, you know, in a very quick amount of time, or you just may get a lot of stuff done in one day, or, you know, it could even last a few days or who knows. And then there's other times when you just can't get stuff done to save yourself. Like you get distracted, you get, you know, and it's a struggle. And life is an average of those two states, I think. So that's why you kind of need buffer time, because there are times when you're going to need that buffer and there are times and you're not going to need the buffer and you can just accumulate it, you know, like leftover minutes on your cell plan, or whatever they call rollover minutes. It just goes that way. So,
well, that's what makes me kind of also then like, where did this buffer time kind of come from? Because it's like we've seen so many episodes where it's like, I even know like in Deep Space Nine, Jadzia was just like, oh yeah, it's like I got to like translate these Bajoran like glyphs from this ruin that we found in some whatever because Sisko had a vision and blah blah blah, and then she's like, hey computer, do this like whatever analysis on this thing. It's like, oh, that analysis would be done in like 48 hours.
Right.
And then it's all like, okay, well, what are they doing the rest of the time? She's in 10 forward playing Dom Jot with like Quark, you know. It's like, okay, well, isn't that not like your buffer time? I don't know.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was like some play on that or like whatever, because you never see any of our senior officers really doing much work.
Yeah.
So if this is kind of a play, it's like, oh, but the lower decks are going to be like having to deal with all this like, you know, stuff while they are playing poker and like doing all this stuff, then that's where I could like see a little funniness. But you know, I don't know.
It is kind of like one of those situations where it's like, well, you're waiting on this analysis and it's going to take 48 hours and it's
right. And it's like senior officers don't seem to have, be like, oh, I have to go to my next thing.
Yeah. You know, don't you have something else you could do while you're waiting?
Yep. Nope.
Yeah.
10 forward playing them harmonica.
You know, and instead, of course, that you would get this kind of thing going on. The old computer from, I always thought that was hysterical, like even in the 80s, you know, going back and seeing a TOS rerun, that they made the computer sound like, you know, one of those teletype things.
Yeah
You know, like, no
that's funny.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on. We only got one bit of feedback remaining that we haven't covered, and that was from Rick from Cleveland. And I'm going to start it off. The dynamic with Mariner and the first officer finally registered some crew chemistry that is interesting. I am actually interested in seeing more of this. Seeing the captain uncertain of herself and questioning her decisions helped drive home that these really are the misfits of Starfleet.
That's good.
Was the Admiral supposed to be Admiral Clancy? I don't think so. You're talking about from Picard. I don't believe so. I don't know what Admiral that was. The main thing I kind of focused on was that the pips were only on the one side, because that wasn't customary, although the uniform seems to be a little bit different than what we saw on Nemesis or, you know, in the TNG DS9 Voyager era. So, but anyway. All right.
Well, he continues and he says, I also realized the biggest problem I've had with this show so far. Boimler. Dude is just straight up annoying. His story tracks when they do not include Mariner, I find myself turning out of the show. I would be much more interested with a lesser focus on him. He's Barkley. Barkley is small. Doses was interesting. Nobody wants to watch the Barkley show.
Yeah, true.
I'd have to say, I don't necessarily really agree with that, because I don't think that that's what he's filling that role for me. That is just like, well, yeah, he's going to be the probably maybe the Data or just the, I guess, Barkley, but like,
he's the straight man, you know?
Yeah. And also he's young.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's like Wesley Crutcher in a sense, you know, it's like,
and he
still doesn't know what's going on or how to do things.
Well,
and of the experience.
And he is kind of Wesley Crusher like, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Over exuberant. He is kind of a keener geek, and he is,
wants to impress.
Yeah. He wants to impress. He is very focused, but very annoying. I think that is a trait for him, you know? And he is the type of officer, I think, that could be straight up annoying, you know? And if twisted a certain way, I could see him being like Commander Shelby, you know, after people's jobs, and a little smug for himself. But I don't think that he's at that point. I don't think he'll end up at that point. I just mean that he could be there.
All right. I get what he's saying. It's just, I kind of was like, wasn't really quite, I'm not feeling that kind of thing from him, at least at this point. Mm-hmm. He is annoying. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, he continues and he's like, I think this third episode actually helped me find my groove with the show too. It's a bit of a mindset change to think of this as Star Trek. I struggled with it at first, and now I'm thinking it's more like the Orville. Maybe not even that. It's a Star Trek sitcom. Honestly, I don't know what I'm expecting. This is growing on me, though.
I think it is a Star Trek sitcom. I think that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it reminds me, I've said it already, it reminds me a lot of Futurama, where it was, you know, just like a bunch of misfits on a starship, and very similar, obviously different crew, different circumstances, obviously, but just similar to that kind of show. And that was definitely like an animated comedy or sitcom. Yes. I mean, I could see there being a version of this as a sitcom. And I think I said this before, that I could see, if, you know, in 5 years or something like that, you know, if they keep on building out the universe, they may do a Star Trek sitcom. I know there was talk about them doing a Star Trek sitcom at one point. I don't know how serious they were about it, but there had been discussions about doing it anyway.
Yeah.
So,
well, DS9 was the soap opera
right.
of Star Trek. Right. So this could be the start. Yeah. It took me at first, and I remember like when we were talking about it, the first episode, I was just like, oh, this is just like the worst thing ever. I think I remember like messaging on like Facebook, just being like, oh, this was just horrible. I couldn't even like, this is just like the worst thing I've ever seen and blah, blah, blah. And then as you know, I had a little Romulan ale, but then, you know, then I rewatched it, had captions, you know, like doing what, you know, for the podcast. I was like, oh, I'm actually like kind of paying attention to it more and this and that. And it was like, okay, I kind of get this a little bit. I still wasn't sure about it. Really liked it at first. The first episode definitely was, I didn't think was great, but yeah. It's like from here on out, it's been like, you know, I had to just like stop putting it into my Star Trek expectations of being a fan my whole entire life, having like, oh, the canon and like, oh, these are the rules or like, this is the way it's supposed to be. And you can't do this and it can't do that, to being like, just sit back and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And then once I did that, it's like, I've really come to actually appreciate it a little bit more and enjoy it. It's like, it doesn't have to be Star Trek. It has to be entertaining and it has to be fun. And like I said, in some of my yeses, it was like just the little like tidbits and drops. And like, that was enough for me to just like, okay, cool. It's like, it doesn't have to be perfect, but I'm like, I enjoyed it.
I think it's worth, you know, talking about like what is Star Trek exactly. Like, I think for some people, it's different than for other people. I think like, to me, this is definitely in the universe of Star Trek, you know, like it is in the, I should say maybe in the world of Star Trek, like when you're talking about world building, this feels like it's in the world of, it doesn't feel like it's in an alternate universe or, you know, all that crap that a lot of people have said about the Discovery stuff. It's in the same universe as Next Gen and that all the string of shows that went after it. It is just very different in tone and what it's trying to do, somewhat in look, like certainly the characters. But at the same time, it's very reverent to that time. So it's, you know, it's both.
I mean, right. And I don't know if it's the not too wrong to say, because I think in our generation, and I'm not going to say my age or like whatever, but like if they're trying to bring in new people, like, you know, younger people to like get introduced to the Star Trek, you know, universe and this and that, like this is kind of a little bit of our version of Galaxy Quest.
Yeah.
In a sense, it's like, that's a celebration of the fans of a, you know, universe show like that had a very, like most of us would probably say that's like our favorite movie in the whole entire world, but that's for us. And it's like the new generation, I wonder, so like if this is how they're being introduced to it, it's like, then maybe that's what this is supposed, like this will go on, because it's like, it's like celebrating but also just like having fun with the whole Trek universe. They do this in Star Trek or Star Wars, you know, it's like they, like, it's just, you know, it's like we want, you know, it's like entertain, I don't know, entertain, whatever. You can probably cut it off at some point in there. That makes sense. But I was trying to make a point of just saying, it's like, I started, it's like, yeah, this is kind of the same as like, you know, Galaxy Quest. Cause Galaxy Quest was just, you know, it wasn't Trek. It wasn't, but it was just like celebrating the whole idea and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. This could have that kind of same thing, but maybe for a different audience than us.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's kind of where I was trying to go with that.
I would largely agree with that. But I think that this is like, this may be more of a show like Galaxy Quest, but millennials may take to it. The ones that did get into, you know, the Star Trek stuff in reruns, I guess. Anyway, That's it for our feedback, and we don't really have any additional notes, but there were a few things that I put in the references, the spot the references section, so I'll just go into that. Boimler seemed to be humming the TNG theme in the turbo lift when Captain Freeman came in. So,
oh, I missed that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it sounded like to me. I think the Horn Gorillas was a TOS reference. And I believe that's the Mugato. I know that particular like Horn Gorilla was the thing that stopped me from watching Star Trek for about 2 years when I was a kid. It scared the crap out of me. And originally I thought it was the Gorn that did that. In thinking about it, I think it was actually the Mugato. Anyway, so that was definitely a TOS reference. Spores were mentioned. I think that was also a TOS kind of reference, not spores from Discovery. Culber was an obviously Worf. Those were a couple of characters that we've seen that kept their scars. So, and obviously for those of you that have not watched Discovery, spoiler, but the Culber that we have now doesn't have the scar, but Culber from before had some scars that he kept as a memento. And I know Worf did the same. And did Dax do that as well? I don't remember for sure, but I know Worf did.
Yeah, Worf did. But
yeah, I just, and various Klingons obviously have done that, like Martok and that as well. And Laurel, that's another one that kept her scars. The Great Bird of the Galaxy was a Gene Roddenberry reference. And I think it's probably appropriate that they mentioned him this week because he was born August 19th, 1921. So, and the episode technically came out on August 19th. So that was honoring him on his 99th birthday. So I think that was intentional. And we had mentioned Miles O'Brien, so I don't have to go into that. All right, so let's get into our shipwide announcements. And again, we want to thank Wes Huntington for collecting these news items for us. It's really appreciated. I really didn't have much time to to do that this week. Destination Star Trek in Germany has been postponed again to June of 2021 because of COVID-19. And I believe they had to do that due to like restrictions that were there.
For,
Yeah. GalaxyCon plans five separate events over 5 weeks. That's according to TrekMovie.com. They have them all listed. So go to their website for a list.
I added this like late before we started recording. I saw on Twitter, and it was from Nerdist, that like Paramount is developing three different Star Trek films, and this is from Deadline.
Yeah.
And they were talking about, it's like they were saying first is like the film that was supposed to be set to be directed by Fargo and Legion's Noah Hawley had been put on the back burner. And according to the Hollywood Reporter, his script would have dealt with a galaxy-wide pandemic, but I guess during obviously this time, they felt that it was like going to be a little tone deaf. So like,
really?
Really? Go figure. So his take would have also featured new cast of characters, which also made Paramount a bit nervous. And I'm going through what like was in the article. I was trying to like kind of read it and re-paraphrase it, but it was just like, I'll just put it in here. But what I thought was interesting is like, meanwhile, they were saying the script from the Revenant's Mark L. Smith, who wrote for Quentin Tarantino to direct, is apparently still in play. and I guess despite the rumors of the contrary, and it seems Quentin Tarantino has moved on from the notion of directing that one.
Yeah.
The script is taking place in largely earthbound in a 30s gangster setting, and they were saying it suggests a reimagining of the classic series episodes of the original series, A Piece of the Action, or maybe even The City of the Edge Forever.
Yeah.
So I went back and was looking at those to kind of refresh, and I'm like, lots of time traveling, lots of just back in those kind of settings. So I don't know, that could be interesting.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, we had that Piece of the Action kind of crazy episode, I thought. And of course, City on the Edge of Forever, that involves, time traveling. I think the third script is that one that had talked about bringing back, what's this, George Kirk, I think. Chris Hemsworth playing Jim Kirk's father, and somehow them interacting together. But who knows about that? I don't know. Obviously, maybe if it was a money thing, maybe they have the money now that they're merged together. I don't know. But I mean, I don't think my take on it has been for the past, year or so, that right now, I don't think we need another film. We've got enough Star Trek going on in the medium that I think it excels in on the small screen. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we need to have a movie. So, but if they do a movie, great. I just don't think it's needed right now. I think
there's a lot of we have all the other shows in production, basically, the Section 31 and whatever it was called for Pike and all that stuff. It's they have a lot
Strange
of
New
stuff.
Worlds.
Yeah, Strange New Worlds, that's right. But yeah, they have a lot basically in the pipeline that's okay, you're gonna have basically something Trek wise on streaming, obviously, all the time, if they plan it. So it's this will be interesting to see, because I think the whole pandemic in one has basically just shoved everything that you thought was supposed to happen and timetables out the window. And if they want to do that, then maybe it will be hey, it's instead of being a theater release, a lot of stuff is now coming out just being hey, it's going to be on your streaming service and you can pay just as much as you would if you went to the theater and just watch it at home, which is what I would probably prefer, because I was a little mad about Mulan being Disney Plus only, and then you can only see it there and pay $30. I'm like, yeah. I would pay that right now on any streaming service, and I don't have Disney Plus.
Yeah. I think it does allow CBS All Access or Paramount Plus or whatever they're going to end up calling it. They can do direct to, streaming service movies there and do, smaller movies. They don't need to do, these huge $200-$250 million movies. They can do $100 million movies or $60 million movies, and
And still have the same
quality,
everything, and exactly. Just be hey, but if you're a subscriber, right, or whatever, it's here you go, and this and that. I think we will see that kind of a transition happening, and it's every streaming service wants to have their little, HBO Now or whatever the heck it's called now. But it's they have the whole Justice series or whatever, the Snyder cut of, Superman, Batman, whatever. It's hey, but it's that's going to be a year from now. And I'm and I signed up at the beginning because I'm oh, they're supposed to have that, and I would totally love to see it. And it's oh, it's a year from now? Okay, nope. I'm not paying for this subscription. Got too many.
Yeah, it's similar when the when Disney Plus rolled out, they had The Mandalorian.
Right.
And after they had The Mandalorian, it's
nothing.
Yeah, but
yeah, It's just, I don't know. I see this as like kind of like the new landscape that we're going to be like kind of facing.
Yeah, but I agree.
I mean, I've paid for CBS All Access because I know that's going to support Star Trek. And even if I literally did not watch anything until Discovery came on, as soon as it's over, I still paid for it. But it's like, I know that it's like, hey, that's going to be my track. And then it's like that money will hopefully be like, that's what it's going for. So if that's what it takes for me to basically stay, I don't want to be one of those people that are just like, oh, I cancel it this day that it's done and I cancel it. And then I subscribe to something else and like start to watch some other show. It's just like, no, I just want to be able to watch my shows and support them.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I think that they could end up doing movies on CBS All Access, and I think it fits there totally. All right. So anyway, that's it for our news section. So I think it's going to be a shorter episode this week. Why don't you tell people how to contact us?
To submit your theories and feedback, go to talkthroughmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio. You can also call 216-232-6146. You can also send us your feedback through our email, which is at lowerdecks@talkthroughmedia.com, or you can post in our designated episode thread on our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekTTMpodcasts. The deadline for the next episode, which is season 1, episode 4, will be on a regular day and time, Friday, August 28th, 2020, at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central.
And it's worth saying that most people give us their feedback on the Facebook group. And so that's the first place we look. So you could also give us feedback on Twitter. We don't always check it, I hate to say, but that's at Star Trek TTM on Twitter. So go ahead and leave us some feedback there. Another great way to support us is to share us on Twitter, like I mentioned, and Facebook. And we will post the episodes when they come out. And I realized just as we started recording that I didn't post the episode this week for episode 2. Oops. Because I was so behind and I didn't do that, but I will post that after we're done.
It was my fault though too, because I was out of town the week we were supposed to record, and I didn't get back until that Monday. And
what always seems to happen is when, I really have to try to get episodes recorded and done during the weekend, because if I don't, it just turns into a snowball type thing. And that's definitely what happened this week. So sorry, last episode took this long. This episode we ended up delaying by one day, but hopefully you'll get it, probably Monday, and you won't have to wait too long. But anyway, so facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. You can also write us a review there. So please go and do that. Share those posts on Facebook. So they go there first, and then we share them to the Facebook group. And retweet us on Twitter when we do that, especially when a new episode comes out. Subscribe to us in Apple Podcast or the podcast client of choice that you use. And if your podcast client supports it, give us a rating or review. Of course, Apple Podcast does, and it's been a while actually since we've gotten any reviews. So really would love to get a review. We would also, another way to support us is on our Patreon. And we had done our August Patreon, right on August 1st. We will be doing one in a few weeks for September. But you can join that as low as $1 a month and get great content. We've been releasing those episodes to the regular feed largely because of COVID, because people just don't have as much to do these days. And we wanted to get content out there that everyone could listen to. We may not continue doing that for too much longer. So that stuff may be exclusively just to Patreon supporters, but worth saying that the Patreon supporters always get that content first, and they're the only ones in a normal situation that can participate in those. So anyway, we'd like to thank Clint McCollum, Lawrence Todd, James Robbins, Fred Petrie, this guy over there, Kyle McAdams, Kim Vogley, Brian Shiro, Christoph Lechner, Lee Radke, Aaron Mays, Michael Carrier, Stephen Chambers, Kevin Lyle, and Jeff Gentry. Lastly, we mention this each week, if you are listening to us on the Star Trek Picard cast feed and you plan to be watching Star Trek Discovery Season 3, you may want to switch over to the Star Trek Discovery podcast feed instead, which also has Picard and Lower Decks episodes. So it's basically, if you're on the Picard feed, you're getting Picard and Lower Decks. Well, why not switch over to the Discovery feed and get Picard, Lower Decks, and Discovery. So when that comes back in about, I think, 7 weeks, Ruthie will be back, and we will be covering Discovery. Kyle may come on.
I hope so.
Yeah. Although we'll also be dealing with the Walking Dead stuff, so let's not commit to it too much. Everything that is done through Talk Through Media, including the Walking Dead talk through, but also Rebinge DS9 and episodes of Let's Talk Through are on the Talk Through Media all-inclusive feed. So you can also find that. And we keep saying that we're going to release an episode of The Walking Dead soon. We really will probably, I don't know.
Probably closer to when it actually is supposed to come back on.
Yeah. So. But we have some things to talk about on that. One thing in particular. So anyway, you can just, wait with bated breath on that. Our next episode will be covering season 1, episode 4, titled Moist Vessel. Interesting. It reminds me of the spore drive because all the water molecules falling around. But I don't know if it's that.
Yeah, I don't probably know if not. It's that.
Yeah. Anyway, we don't know who has written, directed it, or the description. But until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.